Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another episode of 3GT, where three guys get together and theologize about the topics of the day, be they issues in the church or issues in the government, issues in family, or just any other things that seem to tickle our fancy that particular day. I am Scott Hunt. I am joined with my co-host, my regular co-host, Barry York.
And my favorite,
Kyle Borg, who always keeps me on my toes. Kyle, what did you say to me right before we begin? I hope you don't mess this up.
Yeah, I did.
You said that.
That's a sincere hope.
And yet you go out of your way to sabotage me.
Never.
So here is what I'm going to do. I promise you, we're recording this prior to January 6th. On January 6th at about 5 o'clock in the evening, I'm going to call Kyle Borg. And I'm going to say, Kyle, I hope you don't mess this up. And he'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
God, I am so confident. We really need to build the anticipation for the episode we're going to do on this. But I am so confident in my case against the city of Winchester versus Kyle Borg and Huckleberry Hound that I'm not scared of messing it up.
So can I tell you something, Kyle? People talk to me about trials, and you don't want to go to trial on this. I have had trials that I think I should have won. There's no way I could have lost, and I lost. There's trials I've had where I thought, there's no way I'm going to win this trial. No way, and I won. So you just never know. That's all I'm going to tell you.
That's really encouraging. Thank you.
Well, you know, I do what I can. I mean, I've been trying. I've been trying to help you out.
Trying to keep you humble.
Yeah, I need it. My wife told me I'm having way too much fun with this. And even if I end up having to pay the fines, it's going to be $108. And she said, I would pay $108 to avoid having to go to trial. And here I am just excited about it. So
you're willing to risk $108 to go to
trial.
That's
right.
In all honesty, Kyle, I do hope it goes well for you. I know the facts as you have given them to me, and I trust that justice will prevail. I hope that's an encouragement.
Which is the only reason I'm doing it is for the progress of justice in Winchester.
Yeah,
my ego's not involved in this at all.
Not at all. Not at all, I imagine. Well, this is kind of where I would like to go a little bit. We'll get to it later about the encouraging one another, you and I, Kyle. Barry is kind of in a unique position, but ruling elders and teaching elders encouraging one another. And, there is certainly a dynamic there between ruling elders and teaching elders. And one that perhaps most of our listeners can't quite grasp or don't comprehend the nuances there, the differences between a teaching elder and a ruling elder. And so I kind of thought it'd be good today. We've talked about this a little bit about the distinctions and the clarifications of ruling elders and teaching elders. And I thought, it'd be good to discuss that. So could I get one of you guys to just clarify, the ruling elder and the teaching elder? I don't necessarily need distinctions or anything like that. Is there a difference, I guess, at all between a ruling elder and a teaching elder? And if so, what is that difference?
Yeah, so within Presbyterianism, Presbyterianism, the very name implies that we are an elder-led church. And so that would be distinct, for instance, from Congregationalists, for sure. It would be distinct from other forms of government as well, church government. But Presbyterianism means elder-led. And within many Presbyterian bodies, and I don't know that we want to get into all of the history of it, but there has been the question, well, we believe that there are deacons, they're the servants of the church. We believe in elders, and where kind of does the pastorate fit in that? And historically speaking, there has been a view of three offices where there's a distinction between the office of pastor or minister elders and deacons. In our own context, in the Reformed Presbyterian Church of North America, we would be called to office. We believe that there are two continuing offices in the church, that of deacon and that of elder. But within the office of elder, we understand what we usually call a distinction of function. And so, for instance, in 1 Timothy 5:17, the Apostle Paul tells Timothy, "Let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and in teaching." And so Paul himself seems to distinguish that within the eldership, there are elders who rule, and they are worthy of honor. But then there are also, even within the eldership, those who specifically devote themselves to the preaching and the teaching in the church. And so kind of on the basis of that verse, denominations like ours and many Presbyterian bodies, we distinguish between ruling elders and teaching elders. And it's not a different office. It's just kind of a different job description, for lack of a better term, a different function within the one office of eldership.
And so I guess, you know, to follow up on that, there are some Reformed denominations that hold a three office view. Is that correct?
Yes, there would be those who hold to that. Some of them are more distinct than others. Some coming from Scotland, for instance, would hold to that view. There's some American denominations like the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. When you read their book of church order, it sounds like they're distinguishing between three different offices, that of a minister, an elder, and a deacon. Although I think you would find in that denomination, to my understanding, that there are some who would hold to three, some who would hold to seeing it more as two. So there is some ambiguity in it all. I know that those who hold to a three office view often use the idea of the offices of Christ for biblical support of that, the prophet, priest, and king, thinking of the minister more as the prophet, the deacons more as the priests, and the ruling elders as more the king, so to speak, that they're emulating those offices of Christ and their various functions and positions. But again, as Kyle has said, that in the Reformed Presbyterian Church, we see that there is a plurality of elders, that, as he said, that the very name Presbyterian comes from the Greek presbyteros, which means elder. So the word elder ruled, our congregations are elder ruled, but within that office of elder, we make a distinction between those whose main function is that of ruling. These are lay persons from a congregation that are duly elected and ultimately ordained into that office, versus those who are teaching elders or pastors, ministers, who devote their full time usually to the preaching ministry of the congregation, the administration of the sacraments. And so they often go through more training. They are not just examined within a congregation, but they're examined more on a presbytery-wide function. So there are distinctions, even though we say that there is this one office of elder with the plurality of men serving in a local congregation as a pastor or pastors and elders.
And I think that's important, you know, maybe not to get too hung up on the distinctions, but they are real distinctions. You know, ordinarily in the RPCNA, and this is likewise true of every conservative Presbyterian denomination, you don't get to be a pastor without the equivalent of a Master's of Divinity. We do require formal seminary education. We do not require that with ruling elders. Within the way that our church functions, you know, as a pastor, as a teaching elder, I may preach on any occasion, really in any congregation that would have me. We draw a distinction that ruling elders can occasionally preach. As a minister of the word, as a teaching elder, you know, I can regularly administer the Lord's Supper as a part of the function of the ministry of the word. I can pronounce the benediction. We don't absolutely forbid ruling elders from doing that, but we do qualify it with Presbyterians' favorite language of ordinary or not as ordinary. And so ruling elders may do those things on occasion, but they can't really make a habitual practice of it. because that is our attempt to kind of be distinguishing here between the functions. Just because we are in one office doesn't mean at the end of the day that we can all with an equal degree carry out the work of the eldership.
And usually, Kyle, it's when there is an absence of a teaching elder that a ruling elder would do one of those things. If a teaching elder is available, my guess is most congregations wouldn't have a ruling elder pronounce the benediction or, administer the sacraments. That's just not something a ruling elder would do if a teaching elder is available to do it.
Right. I think it would be fair to say, without getting into all the boringness of the RPC constitution, I think we allow for it for those extraordinary circumstances. But the ordinary assumption is an organized congregation is going to have a teaching elder present to be able to carry out the ministry of the word, whether it's the preaching, whether it's the benediction, whether it's the sacraments.
So we've kind of talked a little bit about the similarities. The similarities and the distinctions. We haven't hit all of them, and perhaps we will, but Barry, you're in a unique position. You are a teaching elder and you are a ruling elder. So
my mind is blown. My small Presbyterian brain can't quite wrap itself around that.
I'm a mongrel. Yes.
Yeah. that's not the word I had in mind, but I won't use that word.
You're a mutt. Say it, Scott. Is that what you're going to say?
I was not. I'm
Call
not going
to say Huckleberry
it.
Hound.
Huckleberry Hound.
Wait till after January 6th to know if you want to be identified with him.
but Barry, being that you've now held and do hold, I guess, both offices, in your mind, are there clear distinctions that should be drawn? And are there similarities that exist that perhaps shouldn't be distinguishable between the two offices?
Yes, just so our listeners understand, when I came to the RPTS to serve there as a professor, and I left my pastorate in Indiana, I was asked to serve as a ruling elder in the congregation where I now attend, and was elected and placed into that office. I agreed to do that. And so in one sense, I serve a local congregation as a ruling elder, although I do retain my teaching elder or pastoral status within the denomination, as Kyle just explained earlier. When you say, do I keep those distinctions clear in my mind? Sometimes it's actually, to be really frank and honest, sometimes I wrestle with it. I really highly value ruling elders. I've always loved ruling elders. And in my mind, sometimes I've almost jokingly said, I feel sometimes like I'm a teaching elder dressed up as a ruling elder. And what I mean by that is when you read certain men like Martin Bucer, or Samuel Miller on the office of ruling elder, they really saw the ruling elders as representatives of the congregation that have arisen up from within them and are their representatives on the sessions that's going to shepherd. They have a very distinct local responsibility to that congregation. And sometimes I don't feel the same that way as I know some of my other elders who I serve alongside with do. And so I don't want to devalue the office of ruling elder by saying, well, any pastor can be a ruling elder. I don't feel that way at all. I've always really been very thankful for ruling elders who are working out in the, quote, the real world, not just in the realm of the church, who have experience as businessmen or common workers or teachers or whatever they may be doing. And there are ways that they can relate to and interact with and be used of the Lord in the life of a congregation that I feel like teaching elders just can't. There are a lot of times the smartest thing I could do as a pastor was say, hey, you need to go talk to Bob or Greg or Tom or Scott or someone that I know could relate to your experience far more wisely than I'm going to be able to do. So I guess what I wanted to say in light of your question is that, yeah, I serve in both. I really do feel called to pastoral ministry. I'm serving in this church in this way, but I think that the typical maybe this is an extraordinary circumstance I'm in, the typical ruling elder is one who is raised up from within a congregation to serve the people of God, especially locally.
And that distinction is actually made by the ordination and examination, right? I mean, in order to be an elder, a ruling elder, you would get examined by the session. But to be a teaching elder, you get ordained and you get examined by the presbytery. So there is a different, I guess, way to this office that is distinct to both. And I suppose it's more common for ruling elders to eventually become teaching elders than it is for a teaching elder to become a ruling elder. Mm-hmm. But there is a difference in how that's handled. Kyle, do you have any thoughts on what Barry had to say about the distinctions and the similarities?
No, I'm just a lowly teaching elder. I don't even pretend to dress up like a ruling elder like Barry does, because that's all I am. That's all anybody's ever wanted me for. So,
well, I know some denominations, I don't think they would probably even allow for it, because they do have that three office distinction. But because we do have just the two office of elder and deacon, you see a little bit more movement between those two roles within the eldership.
So can I ask you, Barry, when you became a ruling elder at your present congregation, were you examined by the session, or was your ordination as a teaching elder, did that kind of, I don't want to say backdoor you in, but did that, were you able to slide on that ordination?
That's an interesting
question. Yeah, Barry, did they violate the Constitution or did they follow the Constitution?
You don't have to answer that. I will recognize a Fifth Amendment right here. I don't have a problem with that.
I'm sure they examined me in some way. Don't ask me to give you the particulars because I can't remember.
Sure.
But I know that.
Okay, Barry, particularly.
I was asked questions.
Okay. And that was just out of mere curiosity. I don't even think I didn't have that written down. I just thought, I'm going to ask that question.
But with all of this, and we've kind of been highlighting some of the distinctions, and the distinctions are there. We believe they're biblically driven, again, from passages like 1 Timothy 5:17. Mm-hmm. And yet, I think one of the high points of Presbyterianism is recognizing, Barry already used one of the key P words, which is plurality. There is no organized church within Presbyterianism that has a solo elder. Because we don't believe that. We believe the scriptural mandate is a plurality of elders in any organized congregation. But the other P word that means a lot in Presbyterianism is parity. And that is, despite the distinction of function, every elder is equal in their leadership role of the church. So there are different functions, and we don't serve necessarily in the same degree, but there is an equality of authority. So I was just actually explaining this to my kids a couple of weeks ago, because in their wonderful childlike minds, they figured because dad is the pastor, he's kind of in charge of everybody in the church.
You're the boss.
I'm the boss. And two of my kids are going through membership classes right now. And I said, well, that's actually not how it works. I am just one among five elders in our congregation, and we believe in the parity. We believe in the equality. So I'm not the head honcho in the church, nor should I be. Now, there are some teaching elders that I think want to be, but Presbyterianism has this system of checks and balances. No, we as the elders together are equal. Our opinions, our thoughts on matters relative to the church and our spiritual oversight, they are on equal footing. Just because Kyle thinks one thing does not mean that the session needs to get in line and get on board with that. And I think that's a really important point to make, that despite the distinction, there is a deep unity here as well, which is why our ruling elders participate in our session meetings. So the session is the body of elders, but they also participate in the broader courts of the church, presbytery and synod. And our denomination requires a certain percent of the men that are present at those meetings have to be ruling elders. And that is because of the parity of the eldership.
And then I know Kyle would agree with this. And just one distinction that we would make is, in a sense, the pastor normally is a leader among equals, that he is given a leading role in the sense of he's the moderator of the session. So he would call the meetings to order, often plan the agenda, work with them, and not above them, but in service to them. He would have that that role. And Bootser's book on Concerning the True Care of Souls, where he really develops what later becomes known as the office of ruling elder, he talks about the need for ministers and pastors, but then he says that there's, and we had an episode a few weeks ago where he talked about the variation in the body and how, because the body is just made up of so many different parts and members, there needs to be other men besides just one to be able to tend to them and meet the needs of the congregation. That's why these other elders are important. And it's interesting in Bootser's language, he refers to the pastor as the president of this group. That we don't use that term. We use the term moderator. But there you go, Kyle. If you want to be called president, you could.
I do want to be called Bootser. President. An order for new business cards.
Well, this leads me to kind of the crux of this issue is, I know that there is parity. That's the word Kyle used. There is an equality of office between ruling elders and teaching elders. And yet there is a big distinction. There is a clear distinction, I would like to say. I'll make sure my words are precise for Kyle. I know that's what he likes. There is a clear distinction between what teaching elders do and what ruling elders do. So I think this would be a good opportunity for those who would seek to be teaching elders, those who would seek to be ruling elders, and those that are one or the other, or in Barry's case, both, to know how can each encourage the other. So I want to take this in turn. How can a ruling elder encourage a teaching elder? Or to ask more bluntly, what would you like to see ruling elders do more and do better?
Better be careful.
I think this is a good question. And maybe just to set a very briefly here, just a little bit of biblical context. I think I've mentioned before that I've been preaching through 1 Thessalonians now for some time. And it's very interesting to me that as Paul comes in 1 Thessalonians 5 to kind of the closing exhortations, in 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 11, he says, you know, here's what you all need to do. You need to strengthen and encourage one another. This is your role in the body of Christ. And then he gives, and I understand that as a transitional verse, he then gives these closing instructions. Well, how can we be encouraging and strengthening one another? And the first area of life together that he focuses on is the relationship between the leaders and the congregation. And I think Paul is cueing us into something there that experience proves how important relationship with leaders is in the church. You know, yes, false teaching is a very dangerous, very real thing in churches, but how many more churches seem to crumble and deteriorate when the relationship with the leadership deteriorates? And I think that's very important when we think of elders co-laboring with one another. There should be a huge priority in maintaining a wonderful relationship between the leaders and the church. When that doesn't happen, things crumble. And so I think this is such an important question. And I think, you know, Scott, you were specifically first focusing on ruling elders.
Yes. But I mean, I could take it in any order, but I thought I'd throw us under the bus first.
Yeah. I think one of my big encouragements that I try to bring out with my ruling elders is to remember the parity of the eldership. We are in this together. You know, yeah, I'm happy as the paid guy to you know, bear burdens and shoulder responsibilities, but we are equal shepherds when it comes to the Church of Jesus Christ. And as involved as I am in people's lives, I want you to be involved in their lives, because like Barry said earlier, ruling elders come from, you know, among the people, and they often, I mean, what do I know? I was a meter reader before I went to seminary, like, wow, you know, but there is a practical godly wisdom that often comes with ruling elders that is so invaluable to the ministry of the church. I also often encourage my ruling elders, you don't have to agree with me. You know, heaven forbid, and I mean that, heaven forbid that I just want my ruling elders to be yes men to me. You know, that shows no biblical wisdom. You know, we often sometimes think that healthy relationships have to thrive by just being complete in agreement with each other all the time. I just don't think that's true. Healthy relationships are fostered and true health is built even in the midst of disagreements. And so, you know, try to open the door to, you guys don't have to agree with me on these things. Let's talk about differences. Let's, you know, if we're making major decisions, things like that. And I think, you know, one more thing and then I'll stop babbling. I want my ruling elders to always know that I do value their input. So as Barry said, I'm moderator of our elder meetings. But whenever we come to a decision, I go around the table and I ask very specifically, James, what do you think about this? Bob, are you comfortable with the way we're moving forward? Jay and David, what do you guys think? Because I want them to know I value their opinions. I don't want to just have a rubber stamp to everything.
I really agree with all that Kyle said. I might just add one other idea as we think about this way of the street of from ruling elder to teaching elder. The teaching elder carries the weight of ministry in ways that I think any good ruling elder understands that he carries it in ways that others don't. It's his full-time occupation. He's always thinking about, if he's a good pastor, he's always thinking about the flock, the church, what's going on. And so for the ruling elders to think of themselves as not only shepherding the flock, but at times needing to shepherd the shepherd, just to make sure he's being taken care of himself.
At times and all the time.
Yeah. Pastors, they need enough salary to exist on. They need to make sure that they have time away from their families. And in a sense, the ruling elders become the de facto employers.
I think you meant time to be with their families. Right?
What did
I
say?
Yeah, time away. Sorry. Sorry. Okay.
I just don't want you to get in trouble. That's all. Looking out for you.
That's what a good ruling elder does. He corrects his pastor when needed. Yes, just making sure you're shepherding him, and to realize that pastoring, the weight of preaching God's word, there's just this burden that a pastor carries, and over time, as he carries this for years, he can get weary. And so to make sure that he's getting some of the time away, I'll say this, time away for study, to get spiritual refreshment, I would really encourage your pastor as a ruling elder to have good friendships with other pastors. I know that's been my mainstay through all my ministry experience, just to have other men that I can share burdens with. I do it with the ruling elders locally, but also just to have those who are doing the same occupation that I am, having time together with them, praying with them. That's just been a huge help to me through the years. So those are just a few of the ideas and thoughts.
And I think with that, and I'm not trying to be passive aggressive or overturn any uncomfortable stones here, but one encouragement that I'd have, and maybe it's because I think my ruling elders do a good job at this, is I know that a lot of ruling elders trying to take seriously their role as elders can sometimes be very critical of the pastor's preaching. There's a place for that. Ruling elders do need to help guard the orthodoxy of the pulpit. But within the distinction of the office, we do need to remember it is the teaching elder who has been examined, licensed to be the one who preaches the word. And I think ruling elders should consider then, how can we, yep, we want to guard the orthodoxy, but we also want to trust this man in the pulpit, that he is one who's been set apart for this. And you know, I have seen, and this is not true of my ministry, but there are pastors who are very burdened by micromanaging ruling elders who want to micromanage everything said and the way it's said behind the pulpit. And I actually don't think that's always very helpful.
So Kyle, let me see if I can't get this straight. You want the ruling elders to do more, but not micromanage.
The pulpit.
All right. I'm taking notes here. I want to be a good ruling elder.
So and for the record, that's not passive aggressive. My elders have.
You know, when anybody says, I'm not trying to be mean, I'm not trying to sound rude, that just says, I'm getting ready to say something mean or rude. So when you say this is not passive aggressive, what you're saying is.
I'm Scott. I'm muting myself now. Carry on.
I appreciate what you have to say, Kyle. I don't think you're being passive aggressive at all. On the other hand, there are some encouragements that perhaps a teaching elder could give to the ruling elder as well. I mean, would you agree that this being a two-way street, there are some
Way around. Didn't we just talk about ruling elders can encourage teaching elders?
And teaching elders can encourage and strengthen and you know, yeah. Help ruling elders.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that's the converse of our my question, right? Did I say that wrong, Kyle?
No, you didn't say it wrong.
I thought that we were
you just micromanage me.
Can encourage
talk about micromanaging. Just let the guy lead the podcast. Just let the guy lead the podcast.
Whatever. Fine, whatever. Ask the question and we'll see how Barry answers it.
So how can teaching elders encourage ruling elders? Really, that's kind of a question for me. So I'm going to just let them do their podcast like they want. That's my first. I'm being passive. I'm not even being passive aggressive here. I'm being aggressive here. Let me do it.
Scott, with the wind up to my trial next week, I'm feeling extra polemical. I'm going to start down this road. Feel free.
I don't. But there are certain ways that And Barry, this might be you, since you've seen both sides of the coin, you might be able to help here, but there are ways that a ruling elder can be encouraged by their teaching elders. Mm-hmm. One way I think that we can be encouraged is to remind us that we are equal. We have parity and that we have the right that pastors do. Sometimes I think that it's, and it's not anything pastors do. It's the fact that we recognize that the teaching elders are kind of the president of the session, that we can take a step back and let the teaching elders do everything. And I think it's a good encouragement to be reminded, no, we are, there is a parity here. And I trust you with the ministry of the church too. And I would, encourage the ruling elders in that way. Barry, what are some other ways that you think a teaching elder can encourage and strengthen the ruling elder? I'm not, Kyle, you're muted, so I'm not.
Well, like Kyle said earlier, just saying what you just said, reminding how much the pastor reminding how much he values the ruling elder's inputs, involvement in the ministry, sharing all the ministry with them as far as possible, going on visitations together. So just doing ministry together is a great way to encourage. I think, some real practical things are to honor the ruling elders, to make sure that in front of the congregation, you're reminding the people of God that they, as it says in Hebrews 13, that they're to obey their leaders and submit to them in the Lord, which is not just the pastor, but all the elders together. So honoring them. I always tried to give our ruling elders a place in the public ministry, whether it was taking place in parts of the worship service of praying or reading or some things of that nature, just making sure the elders are known by everyone in the congregation in that leading way. I think a real practical way to honor ruling elders is to remember that they are they are working somewhere else full time, to get to know what your men do. I liked visiting my men in their workplace where that was possible, just to see what they were doing and always asking questions about their work, their lives, their family. I think that's important. I think remembering that when we have a session meeting, that if I'm going to go late into the night, my schedule as a pastor might be I can sleep in the next morning, but that's not always the case with the ruling elders. So trying to schedule meetings and use time wisely, I've found a lot of ruling elders appreciate that and see that as valuing them. So there's a few ideas anyway.
Sure. And I'm going to take a step out on a limb here and say, I think that's one thing that as presbyteries and as synods needs to be considered is that mm-hmm. If there are meetings that are called that have to take place, do it in a time that is convenient, not just for the pastors and teaching elders, but for the ruling elders. I know that there are times that we have special meetings called, and it's not on a day that's convenient for me. I remember very specifically a meeting of presbytery being called, and the meeting was taking place, and I was in the middle of a murder trial, and there's no way I can get out of that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there needs to be, if I could encourage teaching elders, ask your ruling elders to do more is fine and needed, but to be mindful of when they can do it is also mm-hmm. very needed, because we do, we do have a schedule that we can't just miss work, and we can't just, if a meeting goes late, I can't sleep in the next day. I may have court. I may have a trial or something. So, and I know we're in different places, but be like you said, Barry, be mindful of that. I'm not saying it has to rule every decision, but I do think it's helpful to be reminded that not everybody is on the same schedule. And that's good for ruling elders to know too, that pastors get called in the middle of the night when we're sleeping. You know, they get the hard calls. They get the calls to the hospital. Be mindful of that and be gracious when, you know, they may not be in the office because you don't know what they've been through the night before. So I think there needs to be a healthy understanding of the difference in lifestyle, I guess, that a ruling elder and a teaching elder is in, if that's fair to say. Mm-hmm. Kyle, you can nod if you'd like, but don't take yourself off mute. Thank you, Kyle. Kyle said yes and gave me a thumbs up. You can take yourself off. I haven't put Kyle on mute. He muted himself. So are there any, you know, I feel like we've discussed this. Are there any other points that you'd like to make or distinctions or similarities or encouragements that you'd like to bring out? And I know I've given you a hard time, Kyle, but I do value what you say.
No, I think so much of what has been said is very helpful and very right on, just very practical as well. You know, I think sometimes as a pastor as well, you know, and trying to be mindful, I think, of all that you said with regards to ruling elders. At the same time, like Barry said, sometimes the pastor, rightly, wrongly, good, bad, you know, the pastor is seen as the public face of the congregation. That comes with a tremendous burden. I think sometimes, you know, I think about my own year. I've had six massive pastoral issues on my plate that have demanded countless hours. And sometimes it's hard, you know, realizing that people that aren't having issues can easily fall through the cracks. And, you know, so ruling elders, be aware of that. You know, if your pastor's doing some bear share pastoring and working through some very complex situations, you know, sometimes we're spread very thin. And I think that's why the parity of the eldership is so important. We have an equal part in the shepherding. And so reach out to the people who might not be having significant problems, but the pastor can't get around to reasonably without spreading himself far too thin. But again, I do think it's important to note how significant the relationship between the elders is. You know, the health of a church, the vibrancy of a church in many ways will stand or fall with that.
One last thing I might just add to all this, Scott, is, you know, Christ is our example of being a servant leader. And I think we need to make sure that that's what the spirit we're encouraging amongst ourselves and showing to one another. So I know there are times where as a pastor, we have big ideas and want to go take the church in a certain direction. And maybe the ruling elders aren't there yet, and for good, bad, or ugly reasons. And you just need to submit to them. You have to make sure that you're listening to them and valuing them. A lot of times, I know when I was wanting to do something and it wasn't met with a great deal of enthusiasm, God had a way of using that to either change the direction or improve the approach or whatever it may be. So just listening to one another, and especially pastors listening to their ruling elders, is hugely important.
Massively important. No elder in the church is actually freed from the verses that command us to respect our authorities, whether it's mm-hmm. Hebrews 13, 7 and 17, whether it's 1 Thessalonians 5, 1 Peter 5. We are all also under one another. And so mm-hmm. pastors need to remember that these men are my elders called to give an account for my soul. And I need to be demonstrating a humble, submissive spirit to them as well.
I think that's all been very, very helpful. You know, it seems like when I host episodes, it goes extremely long. And I don't know if that's because I give Kyle too much leeway and what he's allowed to say or not.
I've been muted for 25% of this time eating my M&Ms.
Yes, and I'm upset about that because I'd like to have one. But we do thank you for joining us today on 3GT. We hope that this conversation has been enlightening to you, encouraging to you, helping you to encourage one another, encourage your elders, your teaching elders. And so with that, I will say goodbye. We hope to meet with you again on 3GT.